Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 29th day of June, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call. And this week has been so downright over the top when it comes to cataclysmically satanic evil events on a national or international scale that, honestly, there are a bunch of smaller headlines that outline the details of the satanic takeover that have therefore gotten short shrift. But I'm going to begin today with at least a quick recap of just a few of those to let you know that, yeah, there are all kinds of other things going on in the world, and almost all of them point in the same direction. A 6-month-old baby in Tennessee says a number of stories, including this one from the Daily Mail, that had a heart defect at birth and thus needed a heart transplant, was told by the transplant team of so-called doctors, i.e. minions of Satan walking in lab coats, that if the parents did not give young August Stoll a series of, guess what, the Zyklon B injections that would basically destroy the new heart anyway, who are they kidding, they would keep him off the transplant list. Says the story, he spent much of his young life in Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, sick, in Nashville, and in June he had heart surgery, but his parents, who have refused the Zyklon B injection for all kinds of reasons, including the fact that they have biblical objections, the story describes them repeatedly as evangelicals, were given the ultimatum that at least one bioethicist and theologian told Fox News was, quote, puzzling, adding that it was wrong for doctors to, quote, impose their ideology on patients, unquote. And in your host's opinion, that's putting it pretty blankety-blank and mildly. Some are calling it doctors playing COVID politics with the decision. Again, another understatement. The child, the story notes, was already severely immunocompromised. And it does sound like there were a number of vaccines, not just one or two, that the so-called doctors were mandating. And the mother notes that he used that phrase about 8 times during their very first conversation. In any case, the new news today is that the unvaccinated young baby boy, who was initially denied his much-needed heart by those so-called doctors because his parents refused to submit to infanticide, has finally been approved for the transplant. What changed, you're probably wondering? Well, the story isn't going to tell us. The Daily Mail reported that the family has now written that August has been accepted onto the transplant list, but it's unclear, they say, whether they caved and allowed him to be vaccinated or whether the hospital had backed off and waived their mandate. The parents did say that given August's state of cardiac decline, they had made the decisions to prioritize his status on the list because in his extremely delicate state, they couldn't risk moving him, although the opportunities were certainly offered. They did say, quote, Vanderbilt has been clear that they're willing to work with us in some ways regarding our beliefs, but we did not win this fight. They did say, though, that the hospital has, quote, respected our privacy, and it's important we keep the lines of communication open and productive, unquote, although they did add, August will not receive the you-know-what, whose initials might be characterized as COVID-V. And I think they put it that way because they're worried that, yeah, if they texted or tweeted it right on out, Big Brother and his public-private partners would censor it. On to totalitarianism on parade in the U.S. The January 6th or J6 charade continues, but the wheels seem to keep coming off of that choo-choo train. And it looks like not only are Americans starting to see through the Hollywood-style production, some of the liars are backing off, or maybe even just getting killed. For example, did you hear the one about Cassidy Hutchinson? A woman whose so-called credibility continues to plummet faster than Joe Biden falling off a bicycle. And I'll admit it, folks, I've done my best to ignore this whole stinking feted fiasco, but occasionally it is funny to go back and point and laugh. Since you know here that the guilty are going to go free, and anybody that's truly innocent will almost certainly continue to be persecuted. The background, though, goes something like this. On Tuesday, Lion Liz Cheney, scumbag from Wyoming, and the sham J6 committee brought in a woman associated with Mark Meadows. There's a man of integrity, hardy har, and his staffer, Cassidy Hutchinson, as their, ooh, brace yourself, surprise witness. And she trotted out, among other things, this whopper, testifying that, quote, she was told, hey, remember when hearsay was called inadmissible? Well, not in show trials. That then-President Donald Trump, as he was being driven back to the White House on that fateful day, it was an insurrection, all right, just not the way they're spinning it. Well, he demanded to be taken to the Capitol, and then, when the Secret Service refused, he tried to grab the steering wheel from an agent, according to Hutchinson, who allegedly received what turns out to be bogus information from Tony Ornato, assistant director for the Secret Service. Trump got angry after he was informed he wasn't going to get to go to the insurrection, but instead was being driven back to the West Wing. And the fake news media, as Jim Hoff's Gateway Pundit puts it, practically fell over themselves trying to run with the explosive story. And I'm not even going to read what she claimed the president said. The J6 scam witness even claimed that Trump traveled in the Beast over to the Ellipse that day, but trouble was, Trump was in the presidential SUV, not the Beast. And now, there's this, actually being reported from NBC News White House correspondent Peter Alexander, among, it looks like, a number of others, who says, a source close to the Secret Service now tells me that both Bobby Engel, lead agent, and the presidential limousine SUV driver are prepared to testify under oath that neither man was assaulted and that Mr. Trump never lunged for the steering wheel. For his part, President Trump claims that he hardly knows this woman, although he does say he's heard that she's a total phony and a leaker, and adds she is bad news. Reporter Julio Rosas also claims that a Secret Service source told me earlier, quote, FYI, I'm calling bullshit on the Secret Service story. You think none of us would have ever heard of this as an internal rumor? No fucking way, unquote. The Daily Mail's coverage, in their massive photos and videos, actually has a picture of this person holding up her right hand and, whatting. That may turn out to be important later. Hutchinson was caught in at least one other outright whopper during her testifying when she claimed she had written a note of a statement for Trump to release on January 6th, which turns out to have actually been penned by former Trump White House lawyer Eric Hirschman, who called her out on that one. I like Zero Hedge's summary, which says it remains to be seen whether or not Hutchinson will face any consequences for apparently lying under oath, although the already dubious credibility, and that's an overstatement, folks, of the January 6th committee has taken yet another massive body blow. Kind of makes me wonder if they might bring in Anthony Fauci to testify next. Oh, nope, that's tough, because he's down with COVID. Who could have thought it? Related story, or is it? And it really, who knows, folks, but people are literally dying to testify before the J6 committee, or maybe not. Michael Stanger, former U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms, who was in charge of security during that fateful day, died on Monday at the age of 71. Although, coverage says, the cause and circumstances of his death were not immediately clear. And if you've been watching what's going on in America for the last several years, folks, from Supreme Court justices on down, you know that's not likely to change either. A resident of Falls Church, Virginia, Stanger resigned the day after the so-called January 6th riot at the request of scumbag, rhino, and then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who had originally hired the man for the post back in 2018. Stanger was responsible for security in the Capitol and all Senate buildings, serving as Senate doorkeeper, and in remarks before a congressional hearing on February 23rd of 2021, Stanger called the events of January 6th, quote, a violent coordinated attack where the loss of life could have been much worse, and he called for an investigation of, quote, this might be a smoking gun, what he called professional agitators at those January 6th protests. Quote, there's an opportunity to learn lessons from the events of January 6th, he testified. Investigation should be considered as to funding and travel of what appears to be professional agitators, unquote. And some of us might be scratching our heads thinking, no wonder the circus doesn't want Americans to hear testimony like that. And on Monday, his death was reported via a tweet from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, and then on Fox News. You know the old saying, folks, dead men tell no tales. So this is at least another one of those suspicious deaths of which we've seen so many for the last few years as the real insurrection continues. You know that if this is allowed to be called foul play, these clowns will almost certainly try to blame it on MAGA supporters. And if not, they'll almost certainly decide to call it SADS. Unless some of his surviving family decides to reveal he took the poison poke, in which case they'll have a genuine dilemma on their hands of how to spin this one. All we know for sure at this point is the stench remains unchanged. From there, on we go to what your host thinks increasingly is the obvious backup plan. Just in case the November election rigging doesn't come off as already pre-programmed, what's guaranteed to blow it literally off the front pages? Of course, World War III, where both sides, Vladimir Putin's people and those that are pulling the Biden puppet strings, are openly talking about moving nuclear weapons into the Baltic Theater, among other things. Says the Daily Mail's headline, the Baltic nations are now demanding a new garrison of 50,000 NATO troops to, stop Putin from surrounding Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia with a lightning assault through the flashpoint called the Suwalki Gap. In other words, after NATO started to wage a war on the Russian enclave at Kaliningrad, by cutting off rail and surface transport to the separated part of that nation. And Russia, no surprise whatsoever, said, hey, you try to cut them off, we're going to make sure they're not, and we'll cut off anything we have to prevent it. Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are now asking for 50,000 more troops to be permanently stationed, this time across their countries, to face down a full-scale Russian invasion. And that's supposedly to replace a 4,000-troop tripwire force already in place. And this comes amid fears that Putin will do what he has threatened to do, seize a land corridor between Russia's European enclave of Kaliningrad and Belarus along that Suwalki Gap. All of this comes amid a number of other escalations. And on top of the additional 300,000 troops that NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg said would be placed on high alert earlier this week. Imagine, folks, the incredible idea, that number of troops, 300,000 troops on Russia's border. Why, just to put it in perspective, that's almost a third of what's coming into the United States now, this year, around a million or so, give or take, via the invasion at the southern border.
Let's go, Brandon, I agree.
And by the way, I relayed the story from TGP's Julian Conradson. It's not just literally millions of illegal alien invaders swarming across the southern border, where they're given aid, food, medicine, bus and plane tickets, lodging and even cash to spend as they please. Sometimes they even get a Biden phone. But now, says the story, the illegal invaders don't even need to worry about trivial things like immigration status or legal citizenship, thanks to a Biden regime mandate that is on pace to effectively pardon, they put it in quotes, as many as 1 million illegals by the middle of 2024. This week, the Washington Examiner revealed leaked documents showing that federal prosecutors, sick, are quietly and quickly dismissing tens upon tens of thousands of U.S. immigration court cases against illegal invaders under the direction of the regime's order to not prosecute any illegal border crossings. Hey, if you want to run an invasion, you got to bring in the troops from before the 2020 election. And there are currently over 2 million backlogged immigration cases, four times the number from just a few years back, that are now presumably eligible for dismissal under the new regime's invasion policy. What's the regime's latest phrase to demonize as conspiracy theory? No, not de facto amnesty. That's what it is. The not PC term is replacement migration. Seems the regime is really anxious not to have you hear those words, even though it's obviously no longer, even remotely, a conspiracy theory. And ironically, here's the real thigh slapper, folks. It's right out of UN documents. Currently, the story says, almost 100,000 of these cases have already been completely dismissed. And at the current pace, over 1 million additional illegal invaders will have been granted this de facto amnesty by early summer 2024, which, as the Examiner points out, turns out to be just in time for the Biden re-election campaign. Yeah, and if you believe that, all right, well, that's just before, if we have one anyway, the next presidential election. And that's only if the regime doesn't actually pick up the pace. We've got more War on America news in just a second, but I thought this was kind of funny. Comes from HalTurnersRadioShow.com. You have to either laugh or be terrified. And remember, folks, we're supposed to fear not. And says that on the eve of that infamous NATO summit, where they're chosen for World War III, the Russian Space Agency has published coordinates that arguably amount to some kind of a warning of various, and they use this term, decision-making centers. Yeah, it says the Russian Space Agency has made an interesting post to their website, quote, the GPS coordinates of certain decision-making centers around the world. At the time when representatives of 30 participating countries and their sympathizers will declare Russia the world's greatest evil, Roscosmos has published entertaining satellite images of those same decision centers, or rather their coordinates, just in case they're not paying attention to the message here. They're in a number of countries, including the center of the White House in the District of Criminals, the Pentagon, number 10 Downing Street in London, La Palais de l'Elysée in Paris, France, the German Chancellery, a.k.a. Bundeskanzleramt in Berlin, and NATO headquarters in Brussels. There's a message here, and I guess you'd have to be downright senile not to get it. Speaking of which, I guess, the poison poke death toll continues to mount. Says Steve Kirsch's newsletter, the latest survey documenting official death and injury statistics shows that the COVID vaccines, we knew this, are a disaster. About 750,000 already dead in America. These are the short-term effects, folks. There's a 6.6% rate of heart injury. That's more than 10 million Americans. 2.7% are unable to work after taking the poison poke. Call that 5 million plus. 6.3% have had to be hospitalized. Again, over 10 million Americans. You're more likely, and we now see that this is pretty darn obvious, to die from COVID if you have taken the poison poke, the Zyklon B, and of course the boosters, and approximately as many households, 77.4%, lost someone from the Zyklon B, not vaccines, as from COVID itself. If you believe that a million people died from COVID, or, well, even with COVID, from Fauci, one way or another, it's probably closer to the truth. The survey now says 750,000 people have died from the vaccine. And the 95% confidence interval there is at least 600,000 dead Zyklon B recipients. And this, too, is kind of telling. More people, 65%, now believe that the hospital treatments, sick, for COVID may be responsible for killing more people than they lost to COVID, than COVID itself. Think things like remdesivir, destroying kidneys and liver function. Oh, and let's not forget the respirator death sentence. Somehow, though, folks, and I know this firsthand, I don't think they're talking about refusal to give people life-saving treatments like hydroxychloroquine or especially ivermectin. Here's a story courtesy of the Federalist and John Daniel Davidson that I really think bears some examination. Merrick Garland, he writes, and I'd say correctly, and his so-called Department of Just Us, that's a proper pronunciation, is in fact a threat to the Republic. Yeah, he says, it's become painfully obvious over the past year that the Just Us Department under that scumbag, I put that word in there, but it's true, Attorney General, oh man, what a disgusting way to put it, Merrick Garland, has now weaponized and politicized that department to the point that it represents an active threat to the rule of law and certainly the separation of powers. No, he says, it's not too much to say that Garland's DOJ has become a threat to the Republic. Last week, on Thursday, following that historic 6-3 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down a New York law for violating, obviously, not just the Second Amendment rights of New Yorkers, but the 14th Amendment right to equal protection under the law, a DOJ spokesliar released an absolutely asinine statement saying, quote, we respectfully disagree, what a lie, with the ruling. In spite of the fact that the ruling itself was a, great reversal, indicating that at least a few of them there have actually read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And, says Davidson, it's a long overdue vindication of New Yorkers' Second Amendment rights. The law, sick, that is no law, as we now know, see 16 Amateur, Section 177, folks, if you have any doubts on that, has been on the books for more than a century and made it nearly impossible, as intended, for ordinary peons in New York, serfs, slaves, call them what you want, folks, but don't call them actual Americans with a God-given constitutionally protected right, to obtain, what? A permit, a license to carry concealed. Well, right there. You don't need a license if you have a right. But in any case, the unconstitutional law forced New Yorkers to prove to a self-serving municipal bureaucrat that they needed. The asinine term is proper cause, that constitutionally protected piece of property for self-defense. I want it. In practice, this was the intent. It made it virtually impossible for law-abiding citizens in the People's Republic of New York to exercise their Second Amendment-protected constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Emphasis there on the bear, although other laws there make it virtually impossible for them even to keep them. Neither the so-called law in question nor the Supreme Court decision implicates federal gun laws at all. In other words, folks, the unconstitutionality of federal gun laws is beyond debate. All the Supreme Court was doing was say, hey, the states, too, have a problem here. That is, if you believe this 14th Amendment equal protection stuff. Oh, yeah, folks, don't forget Article 4, Section 1, 2. So, writes Davidson, there's no reason whatsoever for the DOJ to even weigh in on the matter, much less express their idiotic, unlawful, anti-constitutional opinion on the ruling. only an utterly politicized Department of Justice hoping to undermine the constitutional authority of the Supreme Court. And so the seeds of nullification, he writes, would issue such a statement. And furthermore, folks, think of it this way. Shall not be infringed means that the DOJ not only has no authority to say anything about it, they're expressly forbidden from even trying to infringe by weighing in on it with their anti-constitutional opinion. But that's not even the worst thing that Garland's DOJ did this week. In the pre-dawn hours of Wednesday morning, more than a dozen so-called federal investigators, I like the term Gestapo nowadays, raided the home of Jeffrey Clark, former Justice Department official with the Trump administration. Why? Because Clark had the temerity to investigate. Merely investigate, folks, claims of voter fraud, which turned out, as we now know, to be more than mere claims. They were truth and they were legion. Voter fraud during the 2020 election, which, of course, made Clark a target for the J6 Communist Circus Committee in the House, whose Soviet-style show trial spent a good deal of time Wednesday implying that Clark, who once oversaw 1,400 lawyers and two divisions at DOJ, is a traitor who tried to overturn the results of the election by merely suggesting that they need to be looked into. Obviously, overturning elections and making sure they stay overturned is Congress's job. You know what's funny, folks? John Daniel Davidson, while he talks about a number of other things, doesn't even mention all of them, like what they did to Dr. Peter Navarro just a while back. Anyway, back to the story. All of this should come as no surprise, since the entire raison d'etre of the J6 committee is to smear and destroy anyone who even questioned the outcome of the election or raised concerns about its unprecedented irregularities. And that's putting it mildly. By calling them a coup plotter responsible for the January 6th insurrection. In fact, though, Clark's only crime is that in a sea of attorneys who didn't want to lift a finger to investigate a rigged election, he looked for options and fought to actually uncover the truth. Of course, he's not the only one targeted by Garland's DOJ this week. More and more, folks, I really do like George Orwell's term from 1984. It's Garland's ministry of love. They'll love you to death. The same day Clark's house was raided, FBI agents raided the home of Michael McDonald, the top GOP official in Nevada. His crime, according to the Justice Department and the J6 Circus, was signing a document along with five other Nevada Republican Party electors after the 2020 election, signaling their support for Trump and their concerns about the rigging that so obviously went on. Among the signatories of the purely symbolic document was the state GOP Secretary James DeGraffenreid, whom FBI agents tried but failed to find on Wednesday. And all of these, says the author, are just a few of the people against whom the J6 committee has unleashed the Just Us Department of the evil Merrick Garland. So far, the committee has subpoenaed more than 100 lawmakers, local officials like McDonald and DeGraffenreid, internet and communications companies, Trump White House officials, and others. Make no mistake, he says, the committee is using the DOJ as a weapon against its political enemies. Tricky Dick would be really jealous at what they're getting away with, and Garland is allowing or even encouraging all of this to happen. And it's not like we haven't seen this building. Remember the raid on James O'Keefe's home and Project Veritas? How about the memo back in October designed to threaten and silence any parents whose only crime was to speak up about what was being done to groom their children with things like transgenderism and especially critical race BS in schools? Garland telegraphed his threat and next move by calling them domestic terrorists. And it was all a great big fabricated whopper. At every turn, Garland has shown himself hostile to the Bill of Rights. Again, he's understating the case. And to law-abiding Americans who would like to exercise those once constitutionally protected rights, while brazenly allowing political influence to direct the considerable and unconstitutional powers of the Just Us Department against the states and the people. If you think about it, folks, that's making war on them, isn't it? The weaponization of the law, or what now passes for it under the Biden regime, he suggests, has only just begun. And here's what your host needs to add now. The traitorous Congress and Senate have just added to that weaponry with a red flag stake through the Second Amendment and the entire concept of private property. Stalin showed us how the Soviets used that tool, and it's hard to imagine Garland hasn't learned that lesson and will be even worse. If you don't support the regime, Achtung, you're clearly a danger to yourself and others. Und wie will deal with you? We'll close now with a quick cautionary tale from where else? The People's Republic of California, where their Department of Just Us and their firearms dashboard portal went live on Monday, publicly accessible files that doxed all of the slaves who had asked for a permit to keep and bear arms in Los Angeles County. Almost 3,000 people, from a few peons to judges and custodial officers, probably some Hollywood bodyguards too, what do you bet, whose home addresses, dates of birth, and full names are now no longer private. Probably, folks, they should have known. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.